Armchair Sports Talk. We just need one good offseason. Won't fool me again. Ooh, look, a mock draft.
All right, welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. We're going to get right into this today. We're joined by Justin Marcus.
Good evening.
And Russ Ivanak.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, boys, so in our little pre-setup, we got me nice and steamed and hot here. Our Detroit Red Wings, I hate them. I don't want to be a fan of them anymore. I want to pick another team, so I'm holding open auditions. Send me your best offer, and I will root for your hockey team because I can't do it anymore. They're not making me happy.
I mean, you could be an Ottawa fan or a Buffalo fan. It could be worse still.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. Like, it could be worse. And I, I know part of that's because, like we said, I'm spoiled as hell the Red Wings. But, yeah, it's just, it's not good. I mean, when the worst guy on your team scores the first goal of the night, it's indicative of how that night's going to go for your team.
Yeah, and it almost fitting with the Philly team that has a ton of talent but can't seem to get out of its own way to be as good as that talent. So,
yeah,
it was an odd game all around.
No, I completely agree. So,
what?
We fall to the Flyers 3-2 last night. Erickson scores a goal, and Russ said this earlier. Erickson and Andrew McDonald scored the first two goals. Who had that? I agree. Voracek, Franz Nielsen, and then I can't pronounce the last guy's name. Travis Coney. They scored the goals for them that night.
It was close, buddy.
Yeah, close. I try really hard at this. Now, the thing that got me as we were going through, we were reviewing the box score for last night. Nyquist, one shot on goal, 18 minutes out there. Tatar had an assist, so we'll give it to him. Mantha, one shot on goal in 18 and a half minutes out there. Zetterberg did nothing in 19 and a half minutes. Larkin, who I've said numerous times is one of our scorers and needs to be that, had one shot on goal in almost 22 minutes out on the ice, and he was minus two for the night. The only guy who contributed was Jay's boy, Glenn Denning, with two assists. Now, Jay, I'll give you a minute to praise your guy, and then we'll get on to hating the rest of the Red Wings.
Yeah, he's a G. I loved him in the playoffs 2 years ago. We attended those things. He's a consistent factor on the ice, and I would put money up that, you know, the names that you just listed, on any night he'll outperform at least two people out of those list of guys that you just listed off. He's consistent. He's just the quiet guy in the background who does his job. He takes a bunch of face-offs. He draws penalties. He gets in the plays. He had two assists, and he hasn't played. I think I heard the last game he played was against Philadelphia, and he comes back, and he's already putting up better stats than everyone that you just listed. I would gut the whole team, and I would only leave him if I was put up against the corner of a room.
You're going to gut the whole team, and the only thing you're going to hold on to is Luke Glendening. Of all the potential talent we have, the only one you're holding on to is Glendening.
Hey, you can't start the show and say you hate the team. You got to commit fully, buddy. It's all about a rebuild.
I hate them too. I don't want him either, though. That's the thing.
There's things I hate that I can still hang on to, right? Like, I can hate a certain kind of soup, but like the noodles in it. I mean, you can hate the wings and not want to get rid of everybody.
You hated me for 20 years, and you still hang on to me, so it's okay.
I still hate you, though.
Yeah, that's fine, as long as the hatred's consistent. I don't think that's the right thing to say, Justin. If you're gonna dismantle this team, there's quite a few players that I think need to be on there, more than Glendening does. But at this point, I can't really fight you because he's the only one that appears to be performing for this team. It's got to be a bad sign when your three best scorers don't put up a single point in that night and only have one shot in a cumulative, like, if you combine all their minutes together, they were on the ice for 60 minutes, and three shots on goal is all we got out of the three guys that should be putting up quite a bit more than that.
Yeah, I would bag skate the whole team in the dark and turn the heat off. Just let them, sit in their own misery for that kind of a performance.
Stick Herb Brooks out there and tell them to just keep blowing the whistle till they all drop.
Again. Yeah. Hell yeah.
I don't disagree with you. Russ, what are you feeling about this?
I mean, we are coming off of two unexpected road shutouts, so the other shoe had to drop. I mean, yes, the game sucked, but I'm used to this team not being all that good, right? So I was still riding that high off of Mrazek being the fifth goalie in Wings history to get back-to-back road shutouts. So probably not as pissed off as you guys are right now.
Yeah, I mean, Mrazek still, he still went, 28 of 31? I mean,
yeah, decent day still.
Yeah, he's still a decent day by, you know, in any regard. It's just, I don't know, it just seems like this team shows so much signs of consistency, and then out of nowhere, the consistency goes away, and you're wondering what the hell you thought you saw during that time, and it's just not happy. And it hurts even more that the guy we all love to hate scores our first goal and sets the tempo for it, because I literally would have rathered anyone else on the team score the goal. Anyone.
He'll make up for it tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Eric, just get ready, because I'm going to the Wings game tomorrow night against the Blackhawks. And
it's going to be a bloodbath just because you're there.
Oh, I know. I almost want to wear a Blackhawks like T-shirt or a polo.
Don't
or something
you
going down there. I feel like entitled, like I need to do that. But seriously, though, I can't wait to see it up close and personal. I won't have any kids screaming into my ear so I can actually watch the game. But seriously, I can't wait to just come back and just be like, yeah, everything that I know is true because I saw it with my own two eyes. And the best part is I can pick.
Mind you.
The best part is I can pick any seat in the house because they'll all be available. So I can sit from any angle and see how crappy they are.
You know what you could do? You could literally just see the game from every perspective. Like, just
exactly
walk all around. First few minutes, you know, upper left, then switch over to upper right. I mean, you could have a good day. And, you could burn off the beer you drink walking to your next seat.
Well, the real trick is going to be, where are you running shoes? And then every time they do that, like, pizza giveaway where you make noise in a section, just run to that section and win. You'll be the only one.
It's true.
Yeah, that's what I need is more hot and sweaties.
I mean, you're there anyway.
Yeah, you're at Hot and Sweaty Arena. You might as well have a couple hot and sweaties.
It's actually called the oven.
It's called the oven.
Yeah.
Oh. Where we overcook everything. I believe you.
You got it.
Hey.
But I know. So before we started this, Russ, you mentioned a potential trade rumor we have going, and yeah, I believe you said we were talking about the potential of trading Justin. How do you say his last name?
Oh, it's omelet something.
Xavier Omeletapa. Xavier Ouellette for who knows what. I said, a bag of flour, but that could provide more defense. What do you guys realistically think we could get for Ouellette? And if so, is it going to be something that's really not going to be of any use to us for the next couple seasons because we don't seem to ever bring up young talent we do acquire?
I think maybe a mid to late round pick. I mean, hopefully we can get something like a fourth for him. But really the most valuable thing we'd get for that is an open roster spot so that we can bring up a guy like Hicketts or a guy like Hronek that we give him 5-10 games and get him a little more acclimated like we were talking about last time. I think that's the real value in getting a guy off this roster.
Okay. Jay?
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually enjoyed watching Hicketts in his first game. I heard some stuff about him being paired with Erickson, which like that's like being mentored by the worst person in your profession. But, I think the move, it might be lateral in terms of a pick and what you get for Mr. Omelet, but bringing up someone like Hicketts or anyone else within the system to actually get some playing time with the team, that's the real win in that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I don't think that whatever we do get, I don't know that it's going to even be beneficial to us anyway. So to me, it just kind of feels like dumping off someone to maybe make a poor decision down the road. Now, we are actually probably pretty close to halfway through this year. Is this a playoff team, guys, or are we looking for another year of playing golf early?
Oh, not a playoff team at all.
No?
No, everyone in the Metro is ahead of us.
Yeah, I remember you said that last week.
Everyone.
Yeah, I'd prefer them to tank every single game and just keep tanking so we can get a better, you know, pick in the lottery. Because I think, I forgot what the odds are and how many teams get a chance at the first overall pick, but just put the tank on right now and lose everything.
Okay. You got a long way to go to catch Arizona.
Oh, I know, but we wouldn't be in that purgatory of missing the playoffs and not getting, you know, the Patrick Laines, the Austin Matthews.
Right.
You know, we're going to get someone like, you know, Omelette, and that's what we have. That's our draft pick is Mr. Omelette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That purgatory of where you just barely missed the playoffs, but you're not benefiting from just barely missing the playoffs. I get that.
It's the saddest place to be in hockey.
It's the saddest place to be in any sport, to be honest. But
no, you're very right.
Now, my last question to you guys before we switch over to Lions and NFL. As we approach, you know, selling day and all that, where we can, you know, trade deadlines and that, who is the one guy on this team that's of use to us that you wouldn't mind seeing us get rid of? And but what are you looking to get in return for that guy? What's the value that would make it okay for us to sell away that player?
That's a tough one. In my eyes, no one is like really protected.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, being able to solidify something, so we're good at one thing. If I had to pick, I would go goalie. I mean, if we could get out of this awkward phase with kind of two number one goalies, even though one's younger than the other, and just make a decision, be decisive, pick a goalie. And if we can trade one or both of them or tag another asset with it to get a solidified number one goalie, even if we fully commit to Howard, give him that confidence boost to be the number one guy. Don't have this, you know, quarterback competition type setup deal. Like, just commit to someone in between the pipes so we can focus on the other positions, I guess, if I had to pick right now.
Okay, so hypothetically, we'll say that Howard's the guy we choose to put our stock on. What do you need to get in return for Mrazek to make it okay for that to happen, for us to part ways with him?
More than we would get for Howard, just based on Mrazek's age. And then in return, my second area to upgrade would be defense, because the wingers, I mean, they're hot and cold and inconsistent, and I'd rather see you know, some of the younger wingers up from Grand Rapids to come up. So get a new piece for the blue line. That's where I would go.
So like a consistent,
and it'd be fair.
Consistent second line defenseman, probably.
Anything better than Erickson, Cronwall, anything.
Well, Justin, if you want that, then we can sign you to a 10-day contract on any team in the NHL, and we could trade for you, because that's not saying a lot. Erickson's a big dude. He's a big dude on skates. He's not anything of merit. So, like, in most teams, he shouldn't even be a first or second line defenseman.
No, he's not doing nothing good.
Okay, Russ.
So I'll take the easy one. Mike Green. He's on an expiring deal. He's a perfect kind of rental player. $6 million a year to a contender. Maybe we can retain some of that salary to get a little more out of the trade. I mean, if I'm Ken Holland, I'm calling everybody to see if we can deal off Mike Green. He's got a no trade, but God, you got to imagine he's going to waive that so he doesn't have to stay here for the rest of the season.
Yeah, but what do you want in return?
Something along the lines of what we got from Brendan Smith last year. I mean, a little more would be nice, especially if we retain salary. So maybe like first and a fourth, second and a prospect, you know, something along those lines.
Okay, all right.
I gotta disagree with one point, though.
Okay.
What's that? You assumed that Ken Holland knows how to use a phone. That's
a
problem.
He's made trades. I don't know if he like holds it with the right orientation, but he knows how to turn it on.
He sends pigeon. He sends his trade offers by pigeon. The man is too ancient to understand modern ways of communication.
Hey, if that gets the trade done, I don't really care. He can send the Pony Express to deal Mike Green away.
You give me an opening to take a shot at Ken Holland, I'm going to take that shot any day.
Absolutely. Now, for me, I'm going to piggyback actually off something Russ said before we started the show. I'm going to, and I never thought I'd say this because I'm a fan of his, I'm going to go with Nyquist. There's enough other young talent on our team that I think we could afford to part ways with Nyquist and not take a big hit. Because like you said, you watch this game, and are there some times where you feel like Nyquist isn't even on the ice when he is, or you don't even notice him out there? I think that's a sign that he's not contributing enough for our team. But at the same time, I think the name and the potential for talent still carries enough weight that if we do offer him up in trade, we could potentially get something for him of value in return. I kind of want to go with what Justin said. I wouldn't mind getting another piece for that defensive blue line. I think with the name and with the talent and potential, I think we could maybe not get a first-line defenseman. I don't think that's happening. We could maybe get a quality second-line defenseman that we can, you know, move around a little bit. He can play, he can help out there, and I think that's probably the best. I don't mind the double goalies because in the past we've won, not that we're going to win a Stanley Cup this year, but we've won Stanley Cups with, you know, double goalies. There were the times where Osgood and Hasek, it was whoever had the hot hand was going. And I don't mind that as much as I would like to say we have a one clear-cut starter goalie with a solid backup. I don't really mind that we have two guys that we can go to on any night.
You know what that reminds me of? Is what Holland actually did last trade deadline when we got rid of Yurko. Like, the Nyquist-Yurko comparison could be easily made because when we got rid of Yurko, it was go to Chicago, never hear about you ever again. And we got a piece for him. So getting rid of Nyquist isn't a bad play at all.
Yeah.
I think you could get back more for Nyquist than we got for Yurko. He's a little more established. He's actually pushed 20 goals under his belt.
Well, and that's I'm saying he's not going to – I don't think – if you look at this team and go off of expectations alone, he, even on expectations, should not be in the top three or four in contributing. It should – we've mentioned multiple guys who should be above him in the – so I think he's capable of doing that, you know, 20 goals. He can contribute, you know, quite a bit out there. So that's why I think getting rid of him, it doesn't necessarily hurt us. I think there's still enough value in him that we could get something worth our while that would make an instant impact when we need it right now. You're not trading him away and then going, okay, yeah, we'll give you a fifth or a fourth or fifth round pick and a prospect. We could say, no, we want this guy. You're not using him. We want him. Let's go with that.
I would even couple him with Green or Mrazek to get that, you know, first line blue liner.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean,
I think if it's out there,
I'd love it.
Oh yeah.
It is enticing. I don't know. Like I said, I would rather stick with Mrazek. I would rather Mrazek be the one, and that's the flip side. Is Jimmy? People have seen enough of Jimmy's, you know, holes that it could be tough. Mm-hmm. It could be tough to say, hey, we'll give you Nyquist and Jimmy, and we want in return this person. Or I don't want to throw out a name, but I mean, just say for argument's sake, we won't get him, but we'll give you Nyquist and Howard for Doughty. For Carlson. It's not going to happen, but...
I think what we can agree upon, though, is that we know we're not getting the piece through a draft. So you have to maybe overpay or sweeten the deal to get somewhat of a superstar caliber player, because it's not like we're going to tank fully and get that young guy through a trade. So we need... Or through the draft, rather. So we need to almost overpay to get our piece going forward and then develop the younger guys inward. I don't know how else we'd get a superstar caliber player.
This almost needs to be, and again, it was a totally different team. It was a totally different generation. This almost needs to be like a Shanahan thing. We need to go out and get that guy that's super already established that we can bring in and kind of the rest of the team can solidify around him. Because we already had talent, but it was, you know, we needed that final piece. And I think getting someone of established dominance would be really great for us.
I agree.
So we'll see. Russ, anything else to contribute?
Well, just to piggyback on what Justin was saying, I think in the trades, you got to, if you're looking at young guys, you got to take a chance on somebody. Like Martin Erat was traded for Philip Forsberg. Like Philip Forsberg for a third, fourth line guy. Like, those are the trades Holland used to make. I need something like that. Take a chance on some young guys. Just, we know what's in our system. and it hasn't always been working out. So just keep trying. Get rid of these pieces. Stop giving me David Booth.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I just, to me, I feel like over the last, you know, since our last cup, I feel like Holland has taken chances on getting some younger talent. I just feel like we haven't really, it hasn't panned out. Like, I don't feel like any of these, like, draft picks or guys that we keep in Grand Rapids for a year or two and then bring up, I don't feel like any of them have been able to stick.
Well, those have been mostly draft picks. We haven't been trading for young guys, really. We've been trading for David Leguans and Eric Coles that are old, and we're giving away young guys that, yeah, most of them haven't turned out to anything. But
I feel like I forget all these names, like Eric Cole, David Leguan, Jordan Tutu, Daniel Alfredson. Like all those, I feel like I'm just keep getting the same exact guy. Like,
there's no
difference between any of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. It does feel like every year we get our hopes up. We hear the Red Wings are making a signing or something, and we're like, oh, this could be good. And then, you know, it's Steven Weiss or these guys, the guys who don't end up contributing diddly to us.
Right. Well, real quick before we move to a different topic, I did hear that Holland said that they're either going to be sellers or stand pat at the deadline, which we're approaching within, I think, less than a month or just a month till it.
Mm-hmm.
I see, this is why I want them to lose to Chicago. I want them to lose as many games as possible so they actually become sellers, because that means we're turning a corner into, you know, into something better, I'd hope. But if we, like, go 500 with the rest of our games into February and we're just going to stand pat with the same team, it's like banging your head up against a wall for no reason. So
yeah.
I hope they sell. I really do.
The only thing that scares me, though, is when you're a buyer, it means that you're getting that last piece you think you need. Selling means you know you don't have a chance, and it just worries me that we've seen what Ken Holland can do when he has some talent to work with. I just fear what's going to happen if he sells, if he sells the farm. We could be in for a very, very long corner to turn.
Well, I think we saw last year that Ken Holland being a seller at the deadline means he's not selling the farm. He's going to make two or three trades on guys with limited or expiring deals. And that's Ken Holland being a seller.
But is that what you want to see then too, Jay? Because you said we're either going to be standstill or we're going to be sellers. Is the one or two, a few minimal trades, is that enough selling for you to say we're turning the corner? Or is this, we're going to, I use air quotes, we're going to be sellers, but by that I mean we're going to dump a little bit of money in contracts and get a few more guys that are going to sit in our minor league team for the next 5 years?
Well, the money part is a big play. It's when people's contracts are expiring, how much money is already committed onto the books. They got to balance all that. But they could get rid of Zetterberg, and I wouldn't bat an eye at it. I wouldn't complain at it. They could unload. I'm not even joking.
They won't
do it, though,
dude. They won't. You know they won't.
Of course not. But for me, maybe I'm going from one extreme to the next in terms of an answer, but it's just like there's no one on that team that's going to make us Stanley Cup contenders, playoff contenders this year or even next year. If we have the same exact roster, We're just sitting around in a circle doing nothing. So like they could get rid of Zetterberg, Helm, and Cronwall. And even if we're unpackaging half of it for money and half of it for picks, good. To me, that's progress. So no one is safe in my eyes. They could sell any asset, and I would be just fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's some guys on this team that we are holding on to just because they're reaching the end and they've been Red Wings the whole time, so they almost seem protected from that regard. But yeah, I mean, no one on this team should be safe. The way we've played in the last year and a half should prove that, everybody's job's open to be, taken over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we'll see what happens there. All right, well, we're going to transition over to Lions football. Even though they're not playing, they're still so much fun to talk about. I read earlier today, and I sent to both you guys on Pride of Detroit, that Darius Slay was named the top corner in all of the NFC. And when I brought that up, Russ and I clearly realized that we don't agree too much on this. Russ, I guess what I'm asking is, state your case for why he should be the top corner.
I think where we disagreed more about is where he lands. Like, I'm not going to get mad at anyone for saying that he's the top, but I'm not also going to get mad saying, hey, he's only top five. But anything less than that, I have a serious problem with. I mean, this guy led the league in interceptions. He led the league in passes defended. And there's not a ton of top-end corner talent in the NFC. I mean, we don't have Ramsey, Bouye, Peters, and Haywood. They're all in the AFC. So if you want to say Xavier Rhodes is better than Slay, but they're in the same conversation, or Patrick Peterson's better, but they're in the same conversation, I'm okay with that. But Slay had an all-pro season this year. And if he's not in that conversation, that is a disservice to him.
Okay. I mean, you can't deny the numbers. Like, the numbers were there. And before we were able to get a hold of you, Justin and I were talking about it. And, yeah, the interceptions is probably one of the big reasons that he's getting this nod. But if you think back to those, it wasn't like he, you know, Justin pointed this out, it wasn't like he read the route and just jumped in front of it. A lot of his interceptions were off someone else getting in there, breaking it up and tipping it, and he, you know, ran up underneath it. So it's not like he was shut down, you know, taking the ball away from these people. He just kind of happened to, I mean, it's a product of being in the right place at the right time, but a lot of it was more just luck that the ball happened to be, you know, right there for him.
Some of them absolutely were. I can remember offhand a couple bounces that, yeah, he was lucky to get, but hey, how many times does a ball bounce up in an NFL game where you have a chance to get it? So, you know, plenty of times.
Yeah. No,
but he still had the most of those in the league. And really, he didn't give up 100 yards receiving game to any number one receiver this past season. I mean, I combed through every single game this year. Mike Wallace was the only one that you could consider a number one wide receiver who had more than 100 yards in a game against the Lions. And you're not going to convince me it's because of E.J. Hayden or T.J. Tabor or whoever was playing on the other side shutting them down, or the pass rush putting the quarterback on his back so that they couldn't pass. Some of that credit's got to go somewhere, and he's the only corner that I'm looking at trying to give it to.
Yeah, no, I mean, that definitely makes sense. And now the point I wanted to bring up, because you did send those numbers, and part of it also was I could have swore that A.J. Green took him to task. But A.J. Green only had 80 yards receiving in that game. So
right.
I'm clearly remembering something incorrectly. But
well, there was a game in the past that I think he got him. I mean, Slay has improved. It's his fifth year. You know, he had a rough start to his career.
But I know at some point during the season, I texted all you guys this, that, you know, whatever receiver it was, and I don't remember who it was, made Slay his, you know, his prison shower mate, because he got beat pretty well. But the thing is, Juju Smith-Schuster was one of the guys you mentioned.
Yep.
And did he have a good enough year that you kind of, the same way we mentioned goalies, he kind of has to be 1B on that team?
I'm not ready to put him there, because on any given night, Martavis Bryant might jump up and steal his targets from him. I mean, when you're in an offense that you've got Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, you're looking at the third most intense coverage from that defense at best at any snap.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. I will. I mentioned it to Justin. It almost feels like the reason I'm not giving it to him is, to me, he just doesn't seem to pass the eye test. There's just, you know, you see the guys out there, and there are guys who can be really good, but it always seems like they do it in an ugly manner. Like, nothing they do is really pretty or top tier, and it's just, to me, that feels like Slay. I feel like you hear, for all the great plays he makes, I feel like you hear almost the mere amount of, you know, misplays. Oh, so-and-so beat Slay on the, you know, 10-yard comeback route. I just feel like there are players out there that are better suited and should be higher up on that than him. And I feel like the interception total that he had this year is kind of really what's propelling him up there. Same as a few years ago, like Richard Sherman got hot there for, and he was considered the best corner in the league. But if you look, Richard Sherman never did anything to get that. He was just the face of that Seahawks defensive back core. You know, if you look, because he never covered the number one receiver. He was always in a zone as like the extra corner out there. And I just feel like that's kind of what Slay. He had a really hot year, and the way we do in sports, that hot year is propelling him a little higher than I think he needs to be.
And there might be some inflation on his hot year. But he has been trending up the last couple of years. The last year, we talked about him being a legitimate starting number one corner, not a top five guy. But to make this jump, yeah, we should probably wait for next year and measure this out and see if he can replicate it. Where's the fun in that? He had a tremendous season, and I'm excited for him. So I think he's got that potential to continue to be a top five corner in the NFC.
Okay. Now, I guess, I can't really say sports does it and we don't do it. If we're saying that he's the number one, if not maybe top two or three corners in the NFC, where does that put him in the league? Now, you got to bring the whole AFC into that. Does he even if he is the number one, does he even make top five in all of the NFL?
I have a harder time with that because, I really like the Jags corners. Peters in Kansas City is really good. I mean, maybe not. He's probably right around that, like, 4 to 8 range for me. I mean, if I'm really looking at it. But I'd have to really sit down and look at it more before I had a solid number I felt comfortable with.
Well, if I could jump in, I think one thing that, you know, Russ, you mentioned that you where's the fun in that? I think waiting until next year will actually help with the answer to that question. Get Matt Patricia in here and see what he's going to do with the defense, and if it elevates his status and his stats, and maybe he passes the eyeball test even more. I think it's not only going to be good for that season, but it will also validate what's happening with him right now.
Ooh, did you just have some optimism?
I did. Well, we're not talking about the Red Wings anymore.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. No, that's a good point. I mean, we might bring in a defensive coordinator who's the hottest coordinator right now in the league, I think. Yeah, might make things even better.
And, well, moving on to that, it does kind of now seem like we know Patricia's going to be the guy. And it just seems like Patricia's kind of making a few moves from afar. I mean, the quarterback's coach was fired. It sounds like he's not going to hold on to too many guys. It sounds like this coaching staff is going to get shooken up. And a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that Stafford has been outspoken in saying he would like to see Jim Bob Cooter stay with the team. As of right now, he hasn't been fired, and the cabinet's getting kind of bare in hiring of offensive coordinators. I mean, teams are pretty much solidifying their staff for the next year. Do you guys think that the fact that the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl, so it's going to be at least another 2 weeks, if not maybe three, before Patricia gets officially announced as the job and can start technically doing all this, do you think that the elongated amount of time he's got to wait is playing into Cooter's favor, that he may get a one-year kind of, let's see what you can do for me, but you have to meet my expectations?
I think he's got to stay. I think just Stafford coming out, because Stafford's a very private dude, right?
Yeah.
So for him to come out and make a comment that's relative to football operations that he's not in charge of, and the fact that you got Patricia having to wait till after the Super Bowl to take the job, and when you put it how the cabinet's getting bare, he stays. And the one thing that I like, because I heard this elsewhere too, is that it almost like it buys time for the organization to stick with another coordinator, have another offense. If they have another off year, then they can say, oh, wait, well, now we have a new offensive coordinator under Matt Patricia's second year and Bob Quinn's third year. So it kind of buys time if we're just a lackluster team next year. And, like, what other option is out there, because all the other good talent is already being absorbed. So, but especially with Stafford, him to open his mouth about something that he feels about that he's not in control of, he stays. And I think that's a slam dunk.
Okay. Russ?
I think you kind of hit on it there of what he is left out there. But the big thing for me is, all right, he took the time to call up a bunch of coaches and tell them, hey, I'm not bringing you back. And Terrell Austin is gone too. So we kind of see who's all left. The fact that we haven't heard anything about Jim Bob Cooter leaving makes me think, hey, he's staying, right? A lot of the coaches are down at the Senior Bowl practices already. If Matt Patricia knew he was getting rid of him, Jim Bob Cooter wouldn't be down at the Senior Bowl practices as a Lions coach.
No, I mean, I think it is. I think signs are helping point to the fact that he's probably going to be there. I'm now curious as to what kind of rope they're going to give him. How much leeway is he going to get? Because I mentioned it to Justin. Jim Caldwell is probably going to be the offensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And Caldwell is an offensive guy. If you look at his track record, he's always had offensive positions in coaching. So it makes me wonder how much freedom Jim Bob Cooter really had. Like we said, that trick play at the end of the game, we think is a little more Jim Bob. He may be a lot more creative, and we just didn't get a chance to see it because Caldwell is an old school kind of guy, conservative, let's use the high percentage plays. So I'm just curious as to how much leeway they're really going to give him. Obviously, you can't come in and say, hey, listen, I'm the head coach. Here's what you need to do in order to be effective. I want a 1,000-yard rusher. I want Stafford to throw for 40-plus touchdowns, because that's a tall order for anyone. So, I mean, how much pressure are they going to put on him, and what kind of expectations are, I guess, understandable or expected for him, Ross?
Well, looking at what Patricia's done in the past and some of his interviews, I mean, the Pats defense on a yardage standpoint, not so great. But on a scoring standpoint, I mean, they're top five in the league for the last 2 years now. And that he keeps parroting that out, that that's what we care about. Scoring is what we care about. Winning is what we care about. So I don't think the counting stats are going to be something that's there, but this team's going to have to score. We're going to have to be better in the red zone. And really, we're going to have to get to 10 wins. 9 at the very least, or I wouldn't be surprised to see Cooter gone this time next year.
Okay. Jay?
I think he's going to be the elephant in the room because he'll be the only top coaching position from the old regime that was under Caldwell and a prior GM. So I think they give him slack to do what he's got to do. You're going to have new leadership in the room with Patricia. And he's going to bring over some experience with a good resume coming from New England. But he's got to hit home runs. And if he doesn't, he's gone. I think, Russ has it nailed down perfectly. It's not about numbers. A lot of people like to fixate on those, but it's about W's. And then it's about Super Bowls and winning them. So if he doesn't perform well in year one, you know darn well Patricia's going to say to Quinn, hey, he's got to go. And they're like, yeah, it doesn't fit the New England formula, and he'll be gone in the year. And then Stafford will have to, come up with a better reason of why you wanted to keep him so badly, because if they don't do well in year one on the offensive side of the ball, Cooter's got to be gone.
Yeah, I agree with that quite a bit. All right, well, I know we've all got some adulting to do, so the one last thing I want to bring up before we end this one is Patricia's current team has made it to their, I believe now, 8th Super Bowl. And I just got to ask, do the underdog Eagles really have a chance here? Backup quarterback, not really, not to put anything off of Nick Foles. He's played great in the few games he's had to take over for them. Are we giving the Eagles a chance here, or are we looking at a potential Patriot thumping?
I would start greasing all the light poles in Philly right now, because I honestly think that the Patriots' days are numbered. I love that defense out of Philly. They are the underdog, which I think only plays into their emotions more. They just ripped the heart out of Minnesota, and they're going to go play the game in Minnesota. I think this is the turning point for the Pats. I think the Eagles win, and you're going to see a lot of drunk people running into subway poles and climbing up light corners. So I'm all about the Eagles winning it.
Okay, Russ?
I mean, they got a chance. I mean, it's football, right? We have the phrase any given Sunday for a reason. And when the Pats have lost in the past, it has been to elite defenses. And I think that's what Philly has. But Jim Schwartz is their defensive coordinator, and I cannot see him win a Super Bowl. It will kill me.
I have to agree with you that I can't see him win a Super Bowl, but I don't think that's something we're going to see. I think that the Patriots played this past week the best defense they were going to see. If you can get past Jacksonville's defense, I think that you've seen the hardest you're going to see. And to me, I think you're going to potentially see what happened to Case Keenum in this previous game happen to Foles. I think he's going to realize the stage he's on. He's going to realize what he's up against. He's up against a team that, I mean, I'm bending the math here a little bit, but there have been 52 Super Bowls in the history of this modern NFL. The Patriots have been to 8 of them. Do you realize that means that 25% or 20% of the time they're there?
Oh, they've been to 55 of them somehow.
Well, actually, I take that back. They've actually been to more than that. This is just the 8th Brady one. They've actually been to...
Oh, exactly.
I think they've been to 10 or 11. So they've been to 50 or 20% of the Super Bowls. I think that Foles is going to finally... His experience level is going to finally catch up to him, and I think you might see a second half fold. And I think Brady's going to get a ring for the other hand.
No, this whole Tom versus Time crap that we keep seeing, well, guess what? Father Time's ready to come collect, and Brady's done. This has to be the turning point. And if it is, I'll be in Philadelphia on top of some corner somewhere on a street just climbing up a greased-up pole.
Will you be wearing a German Shepherd mask?
I will wear anything because that means I'm celebrating something because I'm certainly not celebrating anything in this state.
I hate to break it to you, but the turning point is going to be when Brady retires. It's certainly not going to be on the eve of a Super Bowl that they're favored to win.
But that's a logical response. I'm working on a motion over here.
Unless someone pulls a Tanya Harding knee bash, I don't think this one's going to change.
Let's not rule it out either because Philly fans are crazy.
It's not. Did anybody see the video of that Philly fan FaceTiming telling Tom Brady what he was going to do?
That was unsavory.
That was totally bad, but that's the fanaticism of fans. They get that wired up for it, and it's just you don't want to rule it out, but you hope it never happens either.
Yeah, I mean, fan is short for fanatic, and the people in Philly, they know that.
Exactly.
And
they are crazy. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. As always, I appreciate you guys, tagging along on this. Thanks to Russ Ivanek.
Great. Thanks for having us.
And thanks to Salty Justin Marcus.
Anytime, buddy.
And we will, of course, try to do better next time. We thank you for listening. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
Armchair Sports Talk. If your childhood dreams of being an athlete had a voice.